This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting August 22nd, 2007.
All right, I'm going to call this meeting to order. When you speak today, please speak your name first, just so it makes it easier for the clerk. So, welcome to the 2007-2008 meet, University Assembly Year. Just to make it easier from the recording. Just for the recording. Oh. Pretty nice.
We're sure being as quick.
I'm in my own world.
So we'll do introductions in a few minutes, but are there any late additions to the agenda? Yes?
Adding the Child Care Services Committee is an ad hoc committee to eventually be added, probably a permanent committee.
All right, so the first thing we're going to do today is just go around and introduce ourselves. There's a lot of new members to the University Assembly this year, so that'll be the first thing. If you'd like to start, state your name, what branch you're representing. That'd be great.
Dan Brown, representing faculty. David Rosen, faculty.
Mark Carlos, graduate.
Amy Richter, graduate.
Martin Hedge, faculty.
Joel Marwell, undergrad.
Amy O'Donnell, Assembly's Office. Ari Epstein, Assembly's Office.
Rodney Orme, employee.
Bill Littick, employee.
Randy Wayne, faculty. Stephen Matthews, undergrad.
Hazel Hall, employee.
Okay, great. So the first thing we're going to do, we do this at the beginning of every year, is just do a quick review of the UA's kind of structure. So as you know, for the umbrella organization, we have graduate students, undergraduates, faculty, and staff. Basically, we just funnel a lot of the main big issues that affect all the different constituents on campus. Have a lot of committees, Codes and Judicial Committee, Joint Assemblies Multicultural Issues Committee, Joint Assemblies Financial Aid Review Committee, Assembly System Review Committee, and then there's the Campus Life Standing Committees and Boards, Board on University Health Services, Transportation Advisory Committee, Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board, Cornell Store Administrative Board, Cornell United Religious Works Advisory Board, and then the Associate Committees are Campus Planning Committee, and then the Budget Planning Committee. So in past years, some of these committees have not been as active as we had wished, but that's something we'll talk about later. So those are the committees we work with, and hopefully we'll have representatives too for this year. So one of the first committees that will report to us will be the CJC, and Marty can do that.
This is Marty Hatch speaking, and I'm reporting on behalf of the Codes and Judicial Committee, which met in subcommittee during the summer months many times, at least half a dozen. And its charge, the subcommittee's charge during that period, was to look at the code with suggestions that had been made in mind, and develop revisions of the current code to account for some of those suggestions and to account for some of those suggestions. They had come from the community as a whole and in the various meetings and in the websites, and they had also come from the in the form of letters from the president, who complimented the UA. UA members probably received that letter. If you didn't, did you receive the letter from the president about the code? Can anyone tell me whether it was generally available?
I don't believe so.
Last spring.
Ah, okay.
We'll get that.
Well, we should send that to you.
Yeah.
He responded, the President's office responded to the University Assembly's interim report on the Campus Code of Conduct, thanked the members of the Assembly and the Code of Judicial Committee for the effort they devoted to it, and then talked about the history of the question of its revision, and he agreed with the UA should focus on principal issues of unnecessary complexity of the code, which we had all identified, and procedural issues in the code and appropriateness of penalties and off-campus misconduct, all areas that we thought were important to keep in mind. So with those and community conduct comment in mind, the Code and District Committee Subcommittee asked charged Professor Kevin Claremont, who is in the law school and involved in civil law and prosecution law and so forth of that sort, to review the present code in response to these comments. And he was asked to consider the code in the light of the Krauss report and community input. And he, during the summer, made numerous drafts resulting in a revised code, which we have formulated in the subcommittee. It keeps the best of the present code while addressing community concerns and needs, and adds in those portions of the Krauss report that the CJC felt were of value during the deliberations last semester. As he worked, he consulted with various members of the community, representatives of faculty, staff, and students. The president requests the final report on recommendations for the code by the end of this calendar year, and in order to do that, the CJC is getting prepared to present the revised code to the community for feedback as early as possible in the fall semester. And the plan that has been developed is CJC discussion in committee in September, in October, community discussion with an open forum the first week of October, such as we had in Willard Strait Hall last year. In early November, the CJC will write a report to the UA. November, December, the UA will discuss the CJC report. And at the end of December, the final report will go from the CJC UA to the president's office. And the CJC realizes it's an ambitious schedule, but since we have done so much work on it during the summer, we think that it should be one that's able to be met. So I should say that throughout the summer, the committee had significant participation in deliberations by members of the central administration, all administration. Susan Murphy was at most of the meetings, as was Mary Opperman. Mary Opperman was at several. And so we had, this is a process, in other words, that has had a lot of interaction with the central administration, but has been controlled entirely by CJC. And in other words, it's been under the aegis of CJC. That is, Kathleen Rourke, the chair, has been strongly in control in the direction of our deliberations, and it's not been anything that's submitted in any way to any strong persuasion of one side or another. In fact, one could say that the administration representatives were really quite pleased with how things were evolving and understood difficulties that they faced in any kind of whole scale revision, such as the Krauss report had proposed. So the CJC then, by way of this report, would like to suggest that there'll be a lot of deliberation of the UA necessary in this November meeting, and we look forward to presenting the revised code to you then, and being there to respond to any questions you have. And do you have any questions now about that?
I have a wow.
Yeah. At the leadership breakfast, it was very interesting that we had a assembly's leadership breakfast yesterday, and there was a statement of pledge, one could say, on the part of Connie Bruce, who was there, I guess, as the administrative representative, central administration representative, a pledge enthusiasm, one could say, of the central administration in having legislative community involvement. And they used this particular process of code as a perfect example of how that might, example of how legislative involvement in campus of community affairs might evolve in other areas, including transportation, including planning, including religious work, if necessary.
Basically, all the other committees.
All the other committees. So, and it was quite a surprise to me that it was such a strong testimonial that was given by Tommy Bruce representing the administrative opinion, particularly President Gordon's opinion of the importance of legislative process, this body, the assemblies more generally, and the committees of the assemblies. So, if we're willing, the room is there. Any questions? Good. Nobody's going to ask me for a preliminary report on what the code is about. It's one thing to say is that the difficult areas, most difficult areas, off-campus jurisdiction. The idea of merging the two codes, the two areas in the code, is, from our point of view, off the table. That is, they have to be kept separate. And we have a convincing argument, and I think that everybody accepts that they be kept separate. Those of you know what I'm talking about, and, you know, might be interested in that. Others, I can say more another time. But the off-campus jurisdiction is a really difficult one. And we spent a lot of time working with it. I did a lot of interviewing of people and with regard to victim rights and things of that sort. And I hope we'll have some discussion of that when the code, the revised version, comes to the UA, of how to handle that, whether or not it's handled correctly, what suggestions you might have. Thanks.
All right, so I'm just going to continue on from what happened last year. Clearly, there was all the code discussions, and also one thing the UA spent a lot of time on was going over committees and just kind of discussing them. Dan Brown spent a lot of time, and he got TAC back up and running at the end of the semester. Hopefully, we'll get it going pretty soon at the beginning of this semester. And so hopefully we can get a lot of the other committees going. That's definitely something that needs to be in discussion. And after seeing what happened with the CJC last year and how much it accomplished, we definitely see that a lot of the other committees would be useful. We just need to figure out either where the group went, such as changing their name and figuring out what they changed their title to, or just getting back in touch with them and trying to reopen the lines of communication, which I think would be important. So the next thing I wanted to touch on was just talking about the fall elections. There's two undergraduate seats for the University Assembly still open, and I know a lot of the other constituencies are either redoing elections or having elections. An email just went out from the Student Assembly, I guess, was it yesterday? And so the elections will be happening soon, and hopefully we'll have the new members by the September meeting. But voting would be Tuesday, September 18th till Thursday, September 20th. So if you guys know any undergraduate students, please encourage them to run for these positions. If you guys are professors, maybe announce it in your class or something like that, if that would be at all possible. And then get the news out there. Sure. They have to be an undergraduate student. For the student assembly seat, it has to be human ecology. That's the only seat they have open. And for us, it's the two undergraduate seats. They need to be a full-time student. A registered full-time undergraduate student may vote and run in. For us, it can be any college, any major. And then the online voting. They have to basically go get a packet from the Office of Assemblies. I guess that's available on August 21st.
And it's
Day Hall. to the Office of Assembly.
What's the office?
109 Bay Hall.
And then they fill out the form and do the petitions. Basically, it's all self-explanatory once they pick up their packet. There's a deadline for them to turn in all their signatures. They hand that in. They can go out and campaign on campus and get people to vote for them, and then voting opens. Hopefully, they go get people to vote. They have to read campaign rules. There's certain rules that they have to follow, but they are self-explanatory.
If you...
Can you state your name? Sorry.
Oh, sorry. My name is Matt, from the GPSA. If somebody... I'm not exactly sure what's required as far as, and you briefly went over it here, but it's very easy. A lot of professors could get an overhead projector or could put a slide into their PowerPoint presentation, which is how a lot of announcements get done.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very efficient way to communicate to a lot of students very quickly information about the upcoming elections,
mm-hmm.
and if they want to get involved. So if we, as a group, or if you could put together either a PowerPoint slide and or an overhead projector handout that could just be presented to a class, the professors would find it very easy, I think, to just put it up there for a few minutes as mm-hmm. students are coming in just before getting
right.
started with the lecture and coming into class. That would be very helpful.
Can I do? All right.
Would you be interested in doing that, you guys?
That would be the student assembly election committee.
All right. Who?
We can forward that information on to the elections committee. They have a group of individuals that are all over there.
We also have an SA rep, so you can bring it back and mention it to them.
I will.
Thanks. We also need just to call for the first meetings of CJC, TAC, and then the Campus Planning and Advisory Committee. I think the CJC is planning a meeting on September 10th. And then TAC is coming up as well.
Yeah, we put out a call to any members that might be out there to pick a date and time during the third week of
mm-hmm.
September. That's something I would ask, though, each of the constituencies here, if you could rattle your various assemblies and senates wherever you've got to make sure that they have some TAC members appointed, because I can't do that, or nobody can do that except for the different constituencies. So they should check their people and see, make sure that they're represented, because they don't want to call a meeting and just have nobody there.
There's currently
Amy.
Sorry, Amy Richter. It's been a long day. I'm with you, Robbie. GPSA will be our committee application deadline is September 14th. However, TAC is on our list that if we get qualified people, we are going to appoint them earlier. We have a couple of committees, such as CJC, campus planning, that we are appointing early. So just to let you know that those will be coming.
And we want to get it rolling early so that, you know, the first semesters, from reading the history and the procedures that were selected in your suggestions, that we usually consume the first semester. So we're going to try to ask this time around to find any changes in transportation. Or we're, as the UA, who's in charge of it, we're planning any changes in transportation in Marcus. They get to us in the fall semester, so it could be well discussed and worked over before spring, so they'll come to our last meeting and say, hey, we're going to do this. Folks won't race half a question. So we'll find out as to whether or not the UA is actually have authority over this year. And if they do, they know the procedure. If they don't, then
I know in terms of undergraduate students, when the students apply to be an assembly member, I think the UA committees are also on that list that they can check. So if you could maybe forward me those names or something like that, I can email them. That'd be great.
Marty, I have a question for Dan. There's going to be a transportation department representative coming to the September meeting.
Mm-hmm. The 26th, yes.
Right.
26th.
Yeah.
Right.
He's going to talk about the town of Ithaca transportation.
Right.
Environmental, which they pull together a lot of interesting ideas.
I think it's really important.
I was going to try to ask as many staff members as possible to attend that, so they don't have to give that.
But you're having a meeting before that.
I want to have one before that.
And
pass the test and get things,
right.
Get things sorted out.
At that meeting, isn't it possible that you might come up with some more position on where you stand, the committee and the UA, vis-a-vis the transportation department, that you could test on the, at the UA meeting? And so it wouldn't be just a show and tell, this is what the TGIS says. It would be more, what do we have to do with it? Because if I read that Lee, his name is right, letter, what it seemed to me was he was asking us to say something about TGIS. In fact, he said, we want to get all the community input. Get all the community input before. So if he's volunteering that we should have input,
absolutely,
then we ought to do more than just, you know, sit there and say that's wonderful. And we should be prepared to say something that's educated about that.
So just maybe, Richard, just a quick word on the TGIS. They're actually going to all the assemblies. They're presenting to all the assemblies and requested funds at all their meetings. And one thing that I know GPSA is asked for is to get any written materials they have before our meeting. So they've indicated that if they're going to try and get those out so that we can read things and provide input. My understanding from them is that they're wanting input on what they've come up with. We really haven't had a whole lot of community input, I think, outside the community.
They had two workshops, or Marty again. They had two workshops last year where they presented diagrams and everything else. And I know that it's on the web. There's a good chunk of material on the web already. So it just strikes us that transportation, if they're asking for the And we ought to acquaint ourselves with everything that's around now and have good, solid questions for them when they come.
Marty, it's Rodney talking. Do you have the website information for that?
I don't, but I think transportation has a link to it, the transportation website, and I don't know. You know,
also the transportation committee website has a link to the TGIS website.
That's what. Oh, and ours does. Yes. Okay.
Our transportation
committee has that. Thank you.
If you go to assembly.cornell.edu and all capital letters /TAC, TAC Transportation Advisory Committee.
I wonder if we could hear from somebody involved in master planning or university planning committee. Are you there?
Yeah, I joined it, but I never, Peggy Beach was going to come.
I've become very worried about planning. beginning at graduation last May, several students tell me out of the blue, it hadn't occurred to me in this form, but how distressing it has been for them during their 4 years here to have so much construction going on, how stressful it was, and how it spoiled the aesthetic that they thought was dangerous there, the nature, the tranquility of nature, and so on. And when I walked around the corner about 2 weeks ago, down below Clark, and saw that they chopped down the 7 big, mature, healthy trees, and suddenly realized, oh my God, they're starting another big construction project here. And trees are never sacrosanct. They don't ever sage these big, old, mature trees. But there we go, spoiling another vista. You know, this vista out here is going to disappear, apparently, in some another giant building. And then they've got this permanent-looking trailer building in the parking lot of Spidermatch, which signals the beginning of a massive new construction project. Under Martha Vann, where that building was taken down, so after it was declared unsafe, two other giant buildings were built behind it, so I thought maybe they didn't need it for the building, but there's going to be another building in the parking lot. So there's going to be more disruption and more construction. And then there's Millstein, of it. The way when you come up University Avenue, you enter on the campus, instead of seeing a vista, you know, the new bridge, the gorge, you're going to go for a tunnel, a building tunnel, right, under this mill sign thing. I think that's a horrible way to enter campus. I think that's going to spoil a big aesthetic permanently, forever and ever. So maybe in half a century they tear it down and declare it a monstrosity. But we have architects designing buildings for their own egos that have nothing to do with the setting here. And I'm going to talk about 50 examples off, right off the bat, which are horrible settings for work. Think of Bradfield. I've heard 100 people tell me who work in France. They call it the Tower of Doom. There are no windows. It's a fortress. It's a hideous building to work in. And buildings are designed here. No two buildings go together. There's no harmony except for the older part of the campus. None of them consider the natural setting. They're all just a reflection of the architect's ego and the business office in New York City or something. And none of them consider the overall impact on the aesthetic that is what that plays such a big role in attracting people to Cornell, the natural beauty. And I think this committee should give that some thought. Because I don't think anybody else is giving it.
But there isn't a committee yet, and that's the problem. Let's put it this way. I mean, I think the UA can discuss it. But
actually,
there should be a committee. Randy, I think you're the head of
your... I could report just a little bit on, because campus planning committee, I know they met today. It's an associate committee, so it doesn't need to be convened by the UA. Sort of the planning, the university planner can also convene it. And
who's?
Nina Amundsen.
Nina Amundsen.
And actually, they've on the new master planning process, which doesn't really deal so much with architecture as like land use planning for the university, where buildings will go in the future in general, without talking about specific buildings that will go there. And they've actually been extremely active over the last year. It's just the committee hasn't been reporting to the university assembly, and I don't know if Randy is.
I didn't know about that.
Okay.
Well, we'll email them and see if we can maybe get them.
Well, it's more than email. I mean, the fact is,
I know who to call.
Yeah, you need to get whoever in this august body has decided that they're going to be involved in the planning committee side of things should be a regular informee, if there is such a thing, of everything the campus planning committee is doing. So, and I think Nina Amundsen at one point last year said, we're ready to accept, you know, members from the UA. And I don't know why they didn't inform the UA of it, or maybe they informed you and you didn't get it to everybody else. Is that possible?
No, they've had their own mailing list, although we were talking about starting to manage that for the committee. But we haven't done that yet. Right now, it's managed by...
Yeah, but we have a committee, a planning committee in the UA, right?
Yeah.
And who's on?
Well, the only UA member would be the non-voting liaison from the UA.
Right.
So
we only get one
member. Well, there's also student and faculty members as well on
this. Yeah, the committee is... So this is a general trend in university assembly, is that the committees have people from the various constituencies, but they're staffed by the constituent assembly. So, for instance, the faculty representatives on that committee are chosen by the faculty senate nominations.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly what the committee is called, but
right.
The faculty
nomination
process.
Where
did
you find that committee?
A list of the current members is available at the campus planning committee website, which is assembly.cornell.edu/ Big T Campus, Big T Planning. Oh.
I just Googled.
Yeah, or I should write it down for you.
All right, so moving on, Amy's going to talk about the child care services.
I just want to go back. I think we have to finish this off with something concrete, which is that the campus planning portion of the UA, first of all, we need to make sure that we are present, someone, And if Randy, you can't make it, or then Elizabeth should, somebody should be there. So we can't have a debate in here about something that's not an issue that we have anything to do with. And it can only be an issue when it is done through our, you know, committee report or some committee action.
You do have to find out when the meeting.
Yeah, that's the first thing. And the second thing is that whoever it is who gets there and talks with Nina and the other members of the committee needs to get a report from them to the suite as quickly as it can to the UA, which we then can look at as part of our responsibility, so that we are somewhere, at least in the process of affiliating ourselves.
Somebody from campus planning report to us in the October meeting, because it's going to concern to UA members, and that might help start communication.
Anything else on this topic?
Who's going to do that? Amy or you?
I may not be on the UA as of the September meeting, so.
All right, well, why doesn't the liaison, whether it's Randy or Seth, go and when they... Okay?
I'm going to do something right now.
Okay, great. So then, what if you ask if they can come report to our October meeting, since the fall one has you guys, or the September one has you guys?
Fine, but we'd like to have a report before then of where we stand with them. In other words, what they've been doing and up till now.
You and I could...
If you guys can make a quick report, maybe at the September meeting, but have someone from that committee, they come as well on. All right.
So do we need to call the first meeting for TAC and CJC?
My understanding of the process is that if you designate, you designate somebody who will go ahead and convene that in an arrangement with the committee members. As a matter of fact, CJC already has a date that they want to meet. It's just a matter at this point of somebody presiding over that decision.
Okay. Done. Transportation, it's done too, right? Fine.
I just sent you the website.
Okay.
Also, I want to say about some of the other committees that aren't there. Mm-hmm. This would be an appropriate time to talk about that.
Sure.
At the leadership breakfast, I was really surprised when Dean Walcott, in talking about examples of areas where there was substantive business that that he felt probably need to be discussed in a community forum. He brought up the group that various times I've heard talked about as a group that maybe shouldn't exist at all anymore, the Cornell United Religious Work. He gave two examples of something that group could work on if it were pulled together again. One of them was the elimination of the baccalaureate service, which I don't know much about these issues, but he said that was done without any community input, and he felt that it would have been much better if there was community consultation on that. And the other one was the issue
Chapel.
Of low attendance at Sage Chapel. And I just thought that, you know, it was very interesting that he brought that up, and perhaps there are other committees where, you know, some people in this room, us, we might not be have any issues in mind for them right now, but there may be people out in the community who feel very strongly that there are things that should be addressed in them as you go into reviewing those other committees.
Any comments on this?
Well, you can go to the website of the UA and get to the committees that the UA has some in its constitution has some responsibility for, and think about where you stand vis-a-vis the one or another of those committees.
If there is a committee that you'd be very interested in helping get back up and running and looking into its history and really help jump starting it, please let me know.
I've got to say, looking at the campus planning committee, it has a list of membership and non-voting members. It says vacant liaison from UA as of Friday, June 1st.
Sending her an email right now.
But I don't know that it was your responsibility. We appointed somebody last year. Is there some reason why that person's name wasn't given to the list?
I guess I missed it.
Okay. Then we need to get it on very quickly. You can see all the other members there too. Quite an impressive list.
It might also have meeting dates.
No, they don't.
Nope.
Last one was in March or something. That's on the website. It actually doesn't say contact the assembly office.
Okay. One of the things we said at the leadership breakfast was that all committees might well have their meeting dates listed at the one site, the unified site, so, and those committees would then be open to the extent that they are open, I suppose, but that all of them, that it was assumed, were to at least be viewing to the public.
And that was another leadership breakfast discussion topic about we have a way now with the university events calendar to do that
right
really easily. So,
so these things should be on there. The meeting dates for the campus planning should be on there. Right.
It's important to note, though, that right now that calendar is managed by the university planner's office, so we don't necessarily get those dates far in advance or as a list. But we can work with them on that.
Well, I think it's a good idea to work with them. It's in our constitution to do something with these people.
Yeah, and I'm sorry that I didn't realize Brandy was designated to be a liaison for that. I think, you know, with that relationship, it would be much easier to make those arrangements.
All right. If there's no more discussion on the committees, we'll have Amy discuss the child care services.
Okay. So, Amy, we're here. I'm going to put a formal motion on the floor and move that we add the child care services as an ad hoc committee of the UA.
Could you explain it a little bit?
Yeah. I want the motion on the floor first, though.
A second.
Sorry. I'm a Robert's Rules person. So over the summer, Abe Strock and Amy O'Donnell actually kind of headed up getting the child care services committee going. The university has actually asked for input in some of the logistics in getting the new child care center up and running. So they've got the plans for the building done and approved by the Board of Trustees, and the building is going up by ALOS. And they're hoping to have it open by the end of July-ish next summer.
August.
Or beginning of August. before classes start in August next year. So a year from now. They want to have it open and running. There's spots for 150 children, split just about equally between infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. And so what they're looking for input, and what they've actually been asking for input from this committee, are things, some of the additions to the building, like playground space, or how the spots are going to be allocated, some options for tuition, those kinds of things. And they've really been allowing the committee, they've been asking the committee for a lot of input on these items. The committee includes faculty, staff, students, and also some community members who know things about childcare. So, Sue Day Hall, right?
Dale Hall.
Sue Day Hall, sorry. I'm horrible with names. So, they is a community member. We have somebody from the Center up in Human Ecology that is closing, who's serving on that. And they're providing a lot of valuable input, and we have a graduate student who has children who can provide true speech input to what kind of issues students do. We have faculty and staff who can and they're meeting right now about every 2 weeks. There's enough information, and this is also going to provide some input for the Bright Horizon organization, who is actually going to be the one running and managing the child care center. So they'll be hiring a director of the child care center who will be an employee of Bright Horizon. And this is a little bit of a logistics thing, but the center will be run and managed by Bright Horizon, but affiliated with Cornell, is my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
So Bright Horizon essentially answers to Cornell. They will run the center as we kind of indicate that we would want them to. So whether that's, you know, how the tuition is going to be set, etc. And so, did I miss anything? Who's funding? Cornell is doing the building. Cornell got funding for the building and is paying for the building, which apparently is a massive expense with it being close to campus and having to follow all of Cornell's building guidelines.
And see the height.
And Lansing. And then the actual child care services. Right now, there's still some discussion how that will be handled, whether they'll stay with the current child care grant structure to keep it affordable, because there's been a lot of discussion on how to do that and keep it affordable so that it is only... I think the magical mark is 15% of somebody's salary or family salary at most. So they're trying to figure out some interesting ways, whether Cornell just subsidizes the cost directly or if they continue with the same child care grant structure to be able to do that. And there's complication, by the way, in the finance office is looking at those options.
So are they looking this to be self-sufficient from the point of the participants, or is Cornell going to be contributing some portion of it anyways?
Cornell has about 800 families that are under the child care grant program that receive subsidized money from Cornell, and so they'd like to be able to keep some of that money to subsidize the center. The center will only be open to Cornell affiliated folks. And as far as the contract, the Bright Horizons has a 5-year contract right now with Cornell. But as a person or a family signing up to be at the center, the contract would be between Amy O'Donnell and Bright Horizons. Cornell is not part of that contract.
That's a good question. That's an observation. Now, is this going to be in addition to the child care that's provided as part of the family, or are they shutting it down?
They are actually continuing that. I believe it's as part of their vision of the department. They're not staying with something with it not fitting within their research, but that's more of a departmental thing that's been going on. And the university administration really has focused, or really has reiterated that this is not meant as a quote replacement. They didn't know, this has been in the plans for quite a while, and they didn't know that center was going to close. It was kind of brought up upon them pretty quickly. But that center houses 36 students. This one's going to house 150 children. And some of the same concerns in terms of diversity, quality of education, and those kinds of things are going into this center. The center has a multi-purpose room, has a lot of outdoor space specified for the center.
So it's 100%. This is like phase one of a much larger child care effort that we're going to do, because we actually, in the buildings around campus, a space, a green space, potential playground space, and this sort of thing. I mean, our building is perfect. There's a number of them.
What building is your building?
Mars. Nobody there is thinking that way. It's an atrium that's never used. Nicely landscaped, completely protected. I mean, there's places like this on campus. Is there a movement to move to more on-site child care?
That right now is not a discussion of this particular committee. Right now, they're focusing on getting input for getting this particular center up and running. What they've indicated is that this is the start of a overall child care plan, because right now, child care is one of the things that people consistently say they are having difficulty finding, especially infant care. But on the same token, infant care is very, very, very expensive. And so they're trying to keep that in an affordable range, and there will be 48 infant spots in the city center.
Well, certainly the college campus would be the ideal place for on-site.
That's something that they're looking at, and that this committee in the future may be charged with giving input on. But right now, they're focusing really on the logistics of this particular child care center. And right now, we're moving that to be an ad hoc committee, and then as it evolves, we'll probably add it as a permanent committee of the UA. It seems like it's a focus that they will be addressing.
Ari,
do you have something?
Yeah, the impression that I've got from, and I haven't sat in all the meetings about child care, but it did sound very much like they were going in the direction of a UA-driven committee, and those who had discussed it with right now the Bright Horizons initiative, I think, is managed under the Office of Human Resources. So the Vice President of Human Resources has made it very clear that child care is a big priority for her, but she's also very convinced that for additional child care centers to be built, there needs to be a strong community of people invested in those child care centers who are working closely on that. So one of the ideas in there is a hope that this child care committee could become
something that will
an advocate for expanded child care services.
Randy, I have a very trivial point, but as a dad of an 8 and 9 year old, I'm a search for playgrounds, and when we were in Falmouth last week, there was a playground built by Bob Leathers that was unbelievable. And so one of the ladders that you could climb up was a DNA helix.
Uh-huh. They're actually right now really talking about some playground planners and whether they can reuse some of the playground facilities from the human ecology facility, and to also integrate that in, so that it's a very intriguing space for children to grow and learn.
But on the other hand, intriguing with campus departments or areas, like some of the bridges, if they were made out of different wood as you walk in and play music, or just so all aspects of university, or some aspects of university, then would be built into the playground. And this is wonderful. It was wonderful for the imagination and wonderful for learning.
The committee at its next meeting is going to have, and has actually already had, two virtual presentations of playgrounds, playground possibilities. And at its next meeting may well have representatives from Leathers and then another local playground maker who is quite adventuresome and lively, and with whom the Cornell group has worked the Cornell Early Childhood Education Center has worked in developing their playground. So a lot of thought is being given to playground space, and the committee talks about that, spent 20 minutes on it in the meeting I last attended, which was 2 weeks ago.
And they're actually, the way it looks, it says they'll actually be contracting out the playground separately from the building so that they can use possibly local vendors or even stuff that's already here.
I wanted to ask, where would be the appropriate place to then ask this question? The Department of Human Development in the College of Human Ecology is using a very valuable program as a center building. Now, I understand the position that this community child care program within human ecology came from within the college, but that doesn't mean that everybody was unanimous in wanting it to be here. There are a lot of students within human development whose dissertation, whose work depends on having access to observational stuff with these kids. And it, from within the department, I can say that we were like floored when we realized nobody asked us about the decision was made without talking to the students. And here we are coming to something that we were going to have access to, an amazing resource that's now being taken out from underneath us. Where would be the appropriate place for students to talk with Bright Horizons and say, is this something that we could discuss for the future if and when it's, you know, it's up and running for future interaction?
That's actually a very interesting point. It's already been brought up in the committee. And there's actually observation space built into the facility. There are a little bit.
For every level, infants, toddlers, and preschool, there is at least two avenues of observation. Professor Henry Ricciuti was an advocate, a strong advocate for observational facilities as well as parking for students and faculty. So that's been clear throughout that there needs to be access for students and faculty to come there. And the plus side is there will, instead of having 30-some children to review, there'll be 150. So Elizabeth Stilwell, the director of the program, thinks, you know, this is going to be ideal. I mean, it's five times as many children. Henry Ricciuti has signed off that this is a very good layout with the observation facilities that they've done so far. So it's not been ignored in any way. But if you would like to be in contact with the committee, you can certainly.
I would love to serve as a connection between I'd love to serve as a connection between the Department of Human Development, which is my department, and whatever committee. So if they want specific feedback from the department or from the college, I would be happy to bridge that gap.
Also, ad hoc or permanent, whatever the status of the committee is, if you ever want to contact the committee, there's an email address. It's childcare@assembly.cornell.edu.
Yeah, we've already included it in the website of the assembly office, and is it attached as a UA? Yes, it's attached as a UA committee as well.
On the side.
It's well, maybe status will be kind of up in the air until UA votes on it.
Right, which is today.
Well, right now we're voting to make it an ad hoc. Later we'll have to do
I think even an ad hoc you would have to have like a resolution for the formal.
Well, we'll do it formally at the next meeting.
Are you saying that we cannot frame a resolution here and pass it because we have to field it for a month or something?
No, you usually have to do these things in writing. That's what he's getting at.
Yeah. Well, write something.
Well, write something really quick.
Well, I mean, the committee exists. It's been quite focused, and it has had constituent representatives staffed by various assemblies.
Right.
So, I mean, it's functioning like that, and I know I'm concerned perhaps a little bit about cutting off the effort that I know Abe Stroke is working on, which is crafting a resolution to create the permanent committee, which should be ready by the next meeting.
Right. Oh, fine. I didn't know that.
It's already drafted, and it's pretty detailed. It's just there's some more vetting to go on, and
fine.
But let's leave Abe.
So consider this just notification. I withdraw my second then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, this has been a really active committee that's gotten quite a bit done up to this point. Rodney, did you have another question? I noticed you had. Okay. And so it's really kind of. It's doing the gaining the UA committee structure more legitimacy with the administration. The administration is the human resource office. Is there somebody is there consistently, whether it's Lynette or
Lynette Chappelle Williams.
Lynette Chappelle Williams.
Betsy Schreier,
who are heading up this project falls under them. they've been there consistently gathering our input and taking it very, very viably and very seriously. So it's a very active committee that I think will do a lot.
Did you want to mention that new position to the child care liaison position?
Okay, liaison
position.
Go for it.
At the committee meeting the other day, Lynette Chappelle Williams from Human Resource Office announced that they've hired someone, Eileen Wong is her name, and she will be what's considered a child care liaison. She will help families secure child care. And that's a resource that's been very lacking for faculty, staff, and students now. Your only resource is to call the Child Care Council, and you'll get a list of names and phone numbers. And then you just start calling and find what you can find. But this woman will actually work hand-in-hand with staff, faculty, grad students, et cetera. And then she'll also be heading up the Child Care Grant Program, too.
One important issue that's come up in the, and this is as an example of things that the UA as representing the community might see as areas in which you want to make some comment or give some thought, is the proportion of spaces that would be allotted to the different campus constituencies. Employees, faculty, faculty staff, employees, non-faculty employees, faculty employees, and graduate students, perhaps undergraduate students as well. This is something that has been discussed in several meetings, and there's been some email interchanges about it and so forth. It's an issue to think about. Just for example, If a department wants to use the availability of a child care spot in as a recruitment tool for a faculty, how many of those such spots should be available? Should any be available to departments to commit? Given that they're, you know, when they're making proposals to faculty members to bring them to Cornell. If that is the case for faculty, then would that then take away from the availability for staff, for example, who needs more readily available child care at Cornell? Is it faculty or the staff? In the sense that faculty might be able to afford more expensive care if it's elsewhere more easily than staff members. Things of these of this sort are all swimming around in discussion, and would benefit from. And believe me, there are people doing cost benefit analysis and all this other stuff on the committee. So it's not like these are issues that are just being floated and then not talked about. People are thinking about them, but you can think about them too and frame some of your ideas and. Bring them to the committee, bring them to the UA when the committee makes a report.
So, just a FYI, if you want to provide input or whatnot, the people in this body right now that are serving on this committee, Marty's on the committee, Amy's on the committee, I'm on the committee, and Abe Strock is also on there. I'm positive would welcome the input. From different bodies. We've got a pretty broad cross-section of people represented at this point, and it's been pretty much decided that the committee, in terms of representation, is probably not going to grow, although right now we don't have an undergraduate representative.
Or a bargaining unit staff member.
Or a bargaining unit staff member, and those are two spots that we talked about earlier in the summer doing, but we'll probably have. But feel free to email any of us after today with any.
And I was just on it because it was interim and just in the summer. I'm really happy if another member from the UA wants to take over for me. So if you so desire, just write me a note and tell me, and I'll propose the committee that I kid, so somebody else take it.
Right, does anyone have anything else they would like? All right, then we'll adjourn this meeting.
Anything to bring up? Nothing new? Nothing borrowed? Nothing blue?
I did have questions
on the TJC.
Oh.
That's really wonderful.
Well, we'll see. Next time. Good, thanks.
I did want to talk with the employee representative afterwards about what you want to do about processing.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.